Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. This is the One Heat Minute Productions Patreon preliminarily exclusive podcast about films of 10 years ago in our review. It's ongoing. We started with 2013, 2014. Now we're in the films of 2015. And this is one that it wasn't preliminarily on my radar, because as you'll hear, it wasn't one of my favorites. But in true like me style, you got to give every film its justice, every film its due. And so here I've got my dear friend, Ethan Warren, host of The Great Henson Caper, host of Pod Thomas Anderson.
Host of future shows that we won't even get into.
Host of future
shows. But they'll happen eventually.
Host of future shows, musician, author, writer, father. And look, he's going to science the shit out of Ridley Scott's The Martian. Have a listen to the trailer and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
I guarantee you that at some point, everything's going to go south on you.
Ready?
And you're going to say, this is it. This is how I end.
Commander, Mark is dead.
We have to go now.
Now you can either accept that, or you can get to work.
This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates and to NASA and to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise. Here's the rub. It's going to be 4 years for another mission to reach me. And I'm going to have designed to last 31 days. So I got to make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows. But if I can't figure out a way to make contact with NASA, none of this matters anyway.
We've got an incoming message.
Mein Gott. Mark Watney's still alive.
Woo! In your face, Neil Armstrong. There must be some
kind of way out of here. Okay, so let's do the math. I have enough food to last for 50 days.
He's going to starve to death long before we can help.
So I'm going to have to science the shit out of this.
He's 50 million miles away from home. He's totally alone. What the hell is he thinking right now?
I am the greatest botanist on this planet.
I know how to save Mark Watney.
But we need the Hermes crew.
We either have a high chance of killing one or a low chance of killing six.
I'm not risking their lives.
It's bigger than one person.
No. It's not.
NASA rejected the mission.
So if we do this?
We're talking mutiny. If anything goes wrong, we die.
Do you realize how crazy this is?
We have no other option.
No matter what happens, tell the world, tell my family, that I never stop fighting to make it home.
All right.
What a good trailer.
The magic. This is a really funny one. Top line stuff. If you've never seen The Martian before, I can't imagine that you haven't. It was one of the highest grossing films of 2015. It's had a significant amount of staying power. It was a really great jolt for Ridley. I feel like in his career, as far as theatrical exhibition at this sort of era, stage of his career, it was hugely successful. Written by Andy Weir and Drew Goddard. Andy Weir is obviously the author of the book, and Drew Goddard basically very, very, very faithfully adapted, essentially, and except for excising massive chunks because there's big chunks of the book that obviously aren't in there. Stars Matt Damon as Mark Watney. Has a pretty killer cast. Jessica Chastain, the lesser, unfortunately, Mara, Kate Mara, Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels.
I think it's such an unnecessary swipe at a
I'm just swiping everything in this movie. At the time, Ethan, I'm going to ask you what you remember, but I just want to say, at the time, I walked out of The Martian, and I was Mark Watney. Because everyone back on Earth was like effusive, like, wow, what a movie. Great, great time. So sensational. This thing, 2 hours and 24 minutes, flies by. It's awesome. Look at human ingenuity. And I was like, this movie stinks. It's not
It stinks.
It's not good. It's just absolutely at the ceiling. It is fine.
Wow.
And I rewatched it now, and we can talk about that rewatching series, but I remember hating it. I'm like, this, I just don't like it. I'm like, it did not have, for me, I had just one rule, which was in a space movie, I love me some space madness. I love me some sunshine. Like, peel your skin off and sacrifice it to the to the gods. I just felt like it was too, you just felt too glib for too long. And I was like, like, the movie actually gets better when he starts dipping potatoes in Vicodin. That's kind of my feeling. But please, I was completely on an island. Can you tell me about your experience with The Martian? Because I know I've got great friends who I respect, you being one of them, who like have vastly different opinions to me. And this is purely, I think, a bit of a taste thing for me. Whereas I'm like, my movie is Sunshine because he goes insane. And this is... This is a little bit not my thing. Please tell me about your experience 10 years ago of seeing The Martian.
So I now feel a lot of pressure to say everything all at once, but I won't because we have time.
No, we got heaps of time.
I will tell you about my experience watching this movie, which was very special. But I do just want to say off the top, like, I think this is a perfect movie in that, like, capital P perfect way of, like, beautifully constructed. And I will get into all of that. But why it is the movie I chose for this, and why it's a movie I just never forget about, is so 2015. It's 10 years ago, so I'm 28, and my grandmother had just died.
Oh.
I was lucky enough to make it to an adult age with all my grandparents, and my grandmother died, and I just had the blues, you know.
Yeah.
And like, it was pretty bad. Like, the blues, like, trending in the wrong direction. And I just said to myself, I was sitting in my apartment in Somerville, Massachusetts, basically a neighborhood of Boston. Apologies to the Somervillians who will not take kindly to being called a neighborhood of Boston. You are your own community. And I loved living there because in Somerville is the Somerville Theater. And I said to myself, I will just go walk down to the Somerville Theater and I will just watch whatever is playing right now. I got to get off the couch, get out of the funk, and go watch a movie. And so I walk down there, and the movie that's playing is The Martian. And the thing about the Somerville Theater is there are little theaters. There's screening rooms all over this theater. But then there's like the Palace.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite screening room in Boston. If you saw The Holdovers, that was the Alexander Payne movie, right?
Yeah.
When they go to the movies, it's at the Somerville Theater.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's what they chose to highlight as like the great theater in Boston. And they were playing The Martian. And I went and I sat there. And it was just the most transcendent movie-going experience of my life. Just
wow.
Full stop. Because I'm in my favorite room in like the world. The best movie theater in my city. And I swear to God, for 2.5 hours, nobody got up to go to the bathroom. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
And we just, as a theater, we became one organism. And we were breathing together and we were gasping and laughing and crying. And it just felt like we were all moving as one. And at a time when I felt so sad and so sort of spiritually lonely, to go and just be connected to this huge group of people like that and to share this uniting experience, I walked out feeling. There's a great Drew McWeeny piece. Has Drew been on this network before?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Drew has a wonderful, wonderful essay from about 10 years ago where he talks about movie theaters being his churches.
Yeah.
And that was where I really felt that. This feeling of like we go to be together and experience something and be united and transcend ourselves. And oh, it was just so special. And then I saw this movie again on a plane not that long after that. And I was watching it with my wife, and I have just never seen a human being so engrossed in a film to the point that at the end, when Chastain and Damon are coming towards each other and they grip and then their hands slip apart, she gasped like a human being has never gasped and just grabbed me. And just two like really special experiences with this movie. So the qualities of the film aside, although the qualities of the film are what created those experiences. So there you go.
There you go. I love that you said you had that organism experience in a movie theater where it stops feeling like an annoying movie theater, because as a film critic and a writer and an author as you are, I actually think the worst screenings I go to this day are media and critic screenings or premieres, because they're a circus. Whereas like a 9:30 session of a film that's a few years after this, which I'm looking forward to talking to eventually, when I saw Blade Runner 2049 was like that movie for me, when you said no one got up to go to the bathroom. I think we were breathing in sync in that movie. Like people just
Exactly,
sat
yeah.
there late at night, all these like Ridley heads watching this. Obviously, it was a Denis movie, but all the Ridley heads were like there, who'd like made this movie their life, and they're sitting there and they're expecting the worst. And they get something that's really exultant and beautiful and like unique and gorgeous looking. And at the end of it, everyone just exhaled, like, oh, whoa, that was something pretty special. Or at least that's how it felt. I'm glad you had this experience, and this is what I'm saying. Sometimes I'm going to be on the island. Sometimes I'm going to be Mark Watney floating through space, and you're going to be Jessica Chastain trying to bring me back in. I just like could have floated off into space. I was just like, no, I just didn't like it. And maybe this is my thing. Matt Damon for me is so great when he's being a really cowardly shitbag heel. And I don't know if I love him as much as a leading man. There's just something about that quality of Mark
Sorry, Matt
Watney.
Damon?
Matt Damon.
You like him best as a shitbag heel.
Yeah, I
The
love
what?
him.
The Departed?
I like him in The Departed. I love him in True Grit. I love him
Ooh,
in the
great. Yeah.
I love him in the Bourne movies because he is an assassin and he's a psychopath. Except he
Yeah,
just has a
sure.
crisis of identity when he regains his humanity miraculously, largely thanks to Franco Potente's character, and then but he's still kind of a psycho. And so when I see him in like a straight up, like and even like the last Jason Bourne movie kind of felt this. It was like he'd had this redemptive arc in the original trilogy, and then he swims away, and you get the like killer like. And he swims away, and it's like, okay, what's he going to do for the rest of his days? But then when he comes back, that's more like straight down the line. It doesn't feel like he's the same. He's a guy who's like fighting MMA in the desert. You're like, who is this guy? And so, but that being said,
Sorry.
let's get back to the Martian, because I just
I don't want to. I want to say something about Matt
Oh,
Damon.
so tell me.
You know what it occurs to me? I was thinking about my favorite Matt Damon then, and I think it really speaks to your thesis. My favorite Matt Damon is The Informant.
Oh yeah. Oh
And do you know what
yeah.
he is in that movie? Is he is a shitbag psychopath who's acting like a hero. He thinks he's the hero of the movie.
He thinks he's the hero. That is the, that might be the pièce de résistance. That's like, right. Shit, absolutely shitbag who thinks he's the hero, but he's a psychopath. And it's gleeful to watch him in that movie because everyone knows he's so insane.
So. I'm going to hang up and just go watch The Informant real quick. Like, when is it ever a bad time to watch that? I wrote one of my worst Brightwall Darkroom essays on that movie, but you can go check it out if you want. I ranked the top 10 supporting performances in that movie because wow. my whole big thesis of that movie is that what makes it perfect is that every supporting performance is a stand-up comedian playing it straight.
Yeah.
And so I just went through and like, performance by performance was like, this is why this one is perfect. This is why Patton Oswalt is perfect for this. Oof, now, what a movie.
That's a great movie. But yeah, so that's my kind of thing. But this is the other thing I have to say. We did not know how good we had it. This is the reflection. This is the thing that I will say now is, this is such a technically beautiful movie. Like when I was watching it, I was like, this is just really accomplished, really gorgeous. The production design is phenomenal. All the integration with all of the, like the real world stuff, the NASAs of it all and the different sites and the different ships and the different capabilities and the different scientific, you know, and the Mars rover and all those things. There was something like very, had a lot of tactile texture to it that I did enjoy this time around. And it does have that whole drew the kind of like the other, I think it's the strongest when it's really the core group, Jeff Daniels, who's amazing, can do anything, you know, Kristen Wiig in a unique dramatic performance, great interplay there. But I did want to punch the movie's damn face in when Sean Bean has to explain the Council of Elrond to someone. I'm like, this is not funny.
It's cute. This is hurtful. He's Sean Bean.
It's hurtful. It's really hurtful. He is Boromir. He is our captain, my king. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you're making the one of the greatest, like literally his greatest performance. Screw Game of Thrones. I love Ronan. That's another great one. He's done millions of movies, but his Boromir is like, that's great. Make grown men cry territory for infinity. And for sure. It was kind of embarrassing that happened. But so 10 years on though, I just want to give people some context because like Ridley Scott makes a freaking billion movies a year. It feels like all the way into his 80s. And so let's like just having a look here. Oh my God. He has six upcoming projects. He's in his 80s.
And they're all going to happen. He's not one of those guys who just announces something.
No, he's like, I'm expensive, but I'm fast.
He's going to make them. Yeah.
He's going to make them. So here, he kind of had, you know, he had the Prometheus, hugely popular, very critically divisive, had the Counselor, large flop, huge expectations.
Not hugely popular, critically divisive.
Yeah, not very critically divisive. Yeah, but
more like critically uniting, I guess, and that nobody liked it. But no, they like it now.
I was on that. So I was on the other side. I was like, I love this movie. I was
you
on
patch Travis in, right?
Yeah. Here you go, Trav. Then Exodus, Gods and Kings, which is just like, oof. A tough hang. But then he does The Martian, which makes a stack of money. And then he does a pretty significant run here. He does Alien Covenant, which I think is unfairly maligned, a very entertaining movie.
It's my preferred of the two, of the Prometheus Covenant.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, that's so weird because so many people are like, not Covenant. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's great.
Fun movie. Yeah.
Fun movie. All the Money in the World, where he does the greatest flex in 2017 of recasting a character. He's like, I'm refilming the movie. And even if that movie's not cool, it comes dripping with a level of like gangster that Ridley Scott has, like nearly in his 80s at this time. He then does, got a couple of episodes of TV, but then he does this run, which is crazy. Last Duel, House of Gucci, Napoleon, Gladiator 2. Like this is
Last
really
Duel with Matt Damon.
With Matt Damon.
As a psycho shitbag.
As a psycho shitbag. Again, top tier Damon. Not this guy who's like, you know, the kind of unblemished hero. He, for me, he's never the unblemished hero. He's at his best when he's jealous That's why the talented Mr. Ripley rules, because he's such a jealous, you know, scheming shit. He could never play. He could never be Russell, like in a Gladiator. He could never stand and be like that leader of men. I don't think that's in his wheelhouse, and that's not bad. It's just like this might just. He's way more Dreyfus than he is Scheider, right? Hmm. Like for me, he's like, I would rather if I was having those guys, I'm like, you're not Roy Scheider. That's not you. You're the guy over here that's like the annoying scientist, and also you're not Quint. Like you're that guy. So, but yeah, Ridley Scott and all those movies you mentioned, let's count them. One, a TV movie called The Vatican. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Jesus, 7, 8, 9, 10 movies.
In 10 years?
Full features in 10 years for Ridley Scott.
Damn.
This may be...
And we are the richer for it culturally. What a thing.
In the previous... From 2000, he goes Gladiator, Hannibal, Black Hawk Down is 3, Matchstick Men is 4, Kingdom of Heaven is 5, A Good Year in 2006... 2007, American Gangster, 2008, Body of Lies. Always a bit slow. He did then Robin Hood. He only did 9 from 2000, from those to 2010. And then he did 2012, 13. Yeah, wow. Holy. 10 movies, 10 years. Unbelievable. Ridley. Cool it.
And none of those movies are like undeniable stinkers. Like, those movies all have their fans. I mean, all the money in the world, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody stick up for it. But aside from that, nobody's ever said it's terrible.
No, it's not great, but it's also, that's what I mean. Like, no one, I think everyone was very fair with it. They didn't like it, but they loved him of like, it was just at that time when we were finding out, you know, around the Me Too era movement of like, you were finding out all these like deplorable things about these established people. And there was a lot of like, well, they're still working, whatever, the different varying degrees. And Ridley Scott was the first filmmaker who was like, no, I'll just reshoot the whole movie I'll just reshoot the whole thing. Like, I don't care. I don't want him in the movie. I don't want to have that hanging over my movie, which is pretty gangster. So we talked about sort of how it's grown. I think if we look at Ridley Scott's last 10 years, this is definitely the most critically uniting and box office success. I mean, I know Gladiator 2 has made a mozza as a legacy sequel, but I would say that The Martian probably still stands the most tall. And I hear the most people talk about The Martian continued, and I hear the people, you know, people have forgotten it a little because Ridley works so much, but people talk about it and they like it. And it's, you know, a big towering genre thing, and it made a whole bunch of money for all those people and got a whole bunch of the people that are involved in more work. And so
it's got that one big thing that we haven't talked about yet, because I'm like hesitant to even bring it up, but it won Best Comedy at the Golden Globes. Oh. Just a very silly thing, but I think is earned. I'm going to stick up for it.
Oh my God. The Golden Globes, it's 80 people. This is peak Golden Globes here. It's like 80 people who no one knows.
Yep.
Who have all this money.
And it is category fraud of the absolute highest order.
Oh my God.
They campaigned it as a comedy, which is nonsense, but it's pretty funny. Okay.
It's okay.
What was it up against? That's what I wanted to know.
God.
We're going to find out.
You're going to find out.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Golden it won. God. Oh, and he won for best performance. Wow. Good for him.
Yeah. It did get nominated for 7 Oscars as well.
Best Picture probably, right? Did it?
Yeah, so it was...
I'm not going to make your listeners just listen to me Google things.
No, it's okay. It was nominated for Best Picture. It was nominated for Best Performance in a Leading Role. It was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, Sound Mixing, Editing, Visual effects and production design.
It's going to get nominated for all the technical stuff for sure. Yeah.
All the technical stuff, it got there. And
oh, here we go. For best comedy. Oh, it's a shitty year. Oh my God. Yeah, give it to The Martian. Over Joy. Oh
first
no,
off.
Joy is the better comedy. Okay, Spy. You should give it to Spy.
No, 100%. It's got Jason Statham's immortal line. Like, where'd you get that suit? I made it, didn't I? Like, that movie killed. It's so good. Yeah,
it's that or Trainwreck or The Big Short, which I think are two other movies I would not give Best Picture to.
The Big Short is funny. The Big Short.
I have not
is...
seen it since it came out. It's not a movie I've ever wanted to revisit.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Unlike The Martian.
I like it. So this is the other thing. The only thing, unlike some of the others that we do on the Decade Project, we seem to get these big reclaiming or revitalization after 10 years or all those sorts of things. I just feel like The Martian at the time, and I was on the island, and I'm sort of taking myself out to be more objective here. The Martian was, people thought the Golden Globes were shills at the time. They were very happy for Ridley that he got a Best Picture nomination, happy for Matt Damon that he got a Best Actor nomination, all those sorts of things. But it really truly felt like the movie got its rousing applause and got a stack of its flowers. So in some ways, going back to revisit it now, I was kind of like, I didn't like this movie. I'm going to watch it because Ethan wants to talk about it. And I know that Ethan really likes it. So that's good that, you know, and it's not always that we're going to go and revisit something that I like. Some of my guests I've asked to do something different when they requested to do Jurassic World. And I was like, do you hate me? Can we do something else?
Goodness. I mean, we're assembling a canon here, people. Yeah,
there are so many there are so many great movies of that year. But when I went back and watched it, I was like, oh, I think that maybe it's a little bit forgotten because it did get such an embrace. It got a critical embrace. I was the outlier by far. It got a huge commercial embrace, and then it got an awards embrace. Like, as far as nominations, didn't win. That's okay. Not to, you know, I mean, don't ever measure if your favorite movie doesn't win an Oscar whether that makes it not your favorite movie. case in point, Heat has zero Oscar nominations, zero wins, and The Joker has 11 Oscar nominations. Like. So that, you know, those are the kind of things that you're up against. But I just feel like, Ethan, it's kind of flown under the radar a little bit in Ridley. Cause when you go back to Ridley's stuff, it's not like it's not the first probably three or four that people mention. People are always like, you know, your Gladiators, your Black Hawk Downs, your Thelma and Louise's, your Blade Runners, your Aliens, you know, there was a big, Duelist push with Imprint a couple of years ago. So people were rediscovering that movie. You know, Matchstick Men is one that I'm such a monstrous fan of that feels to pop up. Kingdom of Heaven has been claimed and reclaimed and claimed and reclaimed. And,
and cut and recut.
Cut and recut. The director's cut, vastly superior than the original cut. The Counselor is going through its own reclamation. That people argue over the Alien movies all the time. But
there's just nothing to argue about with The Martian. I mean, aside from if you're you.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what this movie is, though? It occurs to me is this movie is Obamacore.
Oh, yeah.
This is a movie take. Of its era in its beautiful optimism about the world coming together to fix a problem, a pretty small problem. Oh, my God. If someone got left on Mars, nobody would. I mean, we'd probably try to get him back, but I don't think the world would be stopping to watch. We'd politicize it. We'd politicize the hell out of the guy being stuck on Mars. It would become a huge problem for people.
There would be it's people like, who's idea. To blame? Who's to blame? You know who's to blame?
Oh, my God.
DE&I. That's who's
well,
to
blame. And look, you know what? And think about, this is such a weird cul-de-sac to go down, but think about the people in what is it? That Questlove movie about the Summer of Soul.
Yes.
The people they interview who are like, well, why are we going to space? There are problems on Earth. It's a good take.
Yeah. It's not a bad take.
Anyway. Yeah. This movie is Obamacore. And it's a little bit Arrival that way. It really reminded me of Arrival this time. The world stops to fix a problem in space.
Yeah.
And we all come together because of space. A very 60s concept.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Yeah, can't remember when this movie came out. I'm going to quickly Google it while we're chatting. There is a absolutely sensational documentary called Apollo 11 that came out in 2019, which is a reassembly of basically, it's a reassembly of the boundless, like, reams of footage of every conceivable angle as, you know, a historical document of man making its first attempt to not only land but walk on the moon in a manned flight. And that is something that is so, like, that is a transcendent, hopeful, optimistic experience for me watching that movie, because it is like, as a historical document, it's like, oh, remember when science mattered to the world? Remember when human endeavor and intelligence and solidarity, and it mattered? There had to be hands together in an embrace and locked, and like, we can solve this problem that seems like insurmountable, and look at what we can do. Look at human potential. It's a movie that if I ever am feeling particularly down or cynical, I will watch, and I'm like, yeah, like, we have done it. It can be done. And maybe the circumstances have to be right, or the conditions have to be right for it to do so. But you're so right. This is a bit of an Obama call movie, because, like, it's unimaginable that it's like, you only see it in sometimes sci-fi. There's a great Chinese sci-fi called Wandering Earth, the 1 and 2, there's sequels. I don't know if you've seen it.
Never heard of them.
Really, really great. Wandering Earth, like, is like, the earth is in trouble, and we actually have to move the earth further away from the sun is the whole.
That sounds difficult.
Things. And it becomes this huge, like, Tower of Babel international effort that has, like, you know, some factions that are like, we're not moving the earth, and some factions that are like this and that. And it's a really terrific sci-fi, and it has a squillion-dollar budget. It looks awesome. But it's like, that's another movie where I was like, I was reminded of it here, because, like, the Chinese government helped the American government just out of, you know,
good attitude.
You know, it's just, it just doesn't, it seems like it's most fantasy of all in that moment in this movie. Cause I'm like, now I don't want to get dragged down into the everyday politics, but film is a deeply political medium. So yeah. I love your take. And it just, yeah, it feels much more like a fantasy, where it felt like much more of an aspiration. Like, it felt much closer. The Martian didn't feel ridiculous when human solidarity cared about scientific endeavor and pushing those things, and a new Neil Armstrong avatar in Mark Watney and team, that team of people that have gone to Mars to do something, to see if they can grow stuff, to do things there. And then you see all these people that are inspired to join NASA and become astronauts and do their own journeys to Mars, you know, eventually. And it just doesn't feel like, I mean, unless Mark Watney, like, talking down the camera became a TikTok filter, it doesn't feel like anyone would even give a shit these days, you know?
Yeah. Right, I'm going to cross out my note that says Lord of the Rings Easter egg is cute. Deleting that one from the list.
It's got to go.
Can I pick another item off my list,
please,
to pitch you?
Please pitch.
My list of things I noted during this movie. Have you ever heard Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park talk about storytelling?
Yes.
Have you watched this video?
I have watched it a million times. It's
me
fantastic.
Too.
Fantastic.
So this video and this movie, I think this movie is a great example of the South Park theory of storytelling, or the Parker and Stone theory. Which is, as they say, movies don't work, or stories don't work, if the events are linked by the word and then. Mm-hmm. and then this happened, and then this happened. That's not compelling storytelling. What's compelling is, and so this happened, but then this happened.
Yes.
So it's not, and then he went on the rover to the place, and then he set up the thing. It's every moment in this movie is, and so he went to the place, but then this happened.
Yes.
And so this happened, but then this happened.
And
it just escalates and escalates until, like, you think it can't get any crazier, and then it gets 10 times crazier.
And you're so right on that. As far as a story mechanism, it unfolds beautifully. And there's one wrinkle that Chris McQuarrie, Academy Award-winning screenwriter, now great director, big fan of his Mission movies, he said he also subscribes to and loves that thing. And he goes, the only other word should be meanwhile, like, and yeah. So, but then, and then meanwhile,
but that's, I feel like that sort of means, and then, I mean, meanwhile is a cutaway to, and well, that's just a different kind of, and so, I guess, though.
Yeah, it's sort of like an and so, but like in a different space. It's like, and yeah. I think that in this movie, I was thinking about the meanwhile of it all, because it's like, he's got what's great about both stories on the NASA side on Earth. They're doing their and so, but then, and like, and so they have to get this rocket redone, which usually would take them a year, but then it explodes, leaving the and so they've got their own parallel, beautiful thing. So I think that meanwhile connection is just showing like good two kind of halves of a story that can be operating or a chase or two locomotives that are going to the same destination and they're moving nicely along. So yeah, I really like that thing. And yeah, you're spot on. It does have that great thing. And the best parts of the movie from the NASA perspective and things like that are, you know, the Chiwetel Ejiofor's interplay with Jeff Daniels, Teddy Sanders. He plays Vincent Kapoor. And then you've got Mackenzie Davis and you've got Benedict Wong, who's terrific, who's like mostly
half
shot.
Of my notes are just like, oh my God, who's here now?
Exactly.
I didn't know Sebastian Stan was in this movie because I didn't know who Sebastian Stan was in 2015. I had seen him in the Marvel movies, but he did not make an impression on me.
He made an impression on everyone else on Tumblr. Ethan at the time.
Oh, sure, he did.
Bucky Barnes has got a lot of real estate over there. And I'm sorry about my swipe at Kate
Mara. Who were they shipping? Oh,
I'm sorry about my swipe at Kate Mara. That was unfair. I really love Kate Mara in Shooter with Mark Wahlberg. She's the most trashy. She's such a nice like girl usually, but that was a fun one because she was very trashy. Kristen Wiig also was a surprise. I think that was how the category for fraud was instigated, if I had to say. It's like they just looked down and went, look, there's one SNL legend in this movie. We can call this a comedy.
Well, and you know who else was there at the time? This meant something very different was Donald Glover being there.
Yes.
Because he was the Community guy and he's doing his Community thing in this.
Yes. Yeah.
And then he has moved so far away from being that guy. It was very bracing to see this persona back when he's become so much the Atlanta guy and Childish Gambino and all that, which is great. I love Atlanta, but I kind of miss this guy.
I do too. There was a time where I was living in a share house with my cousin. It was very early in my wife and I's relationship. We were just dating at the time and then we were eventually engaged when we were there. And Community was on a very high rotation in the house. If there was something on the communal television, it was like Community because it was just silly and it was great and it just flies by and you just watch season after season after season after season. Yeah. I had no concept of him for us, he was most shocking that he was the Childish Gambino. I was like, man, this guy can actually sing? What the hell? Like, he's hilarious. And then Atlanta is a whole other level of stretch that is very incredible. And so, I mean, it has so many phenomenal actors and all those people went off and made other great stuff. So really, really good. Sliding Doors. So when you go, usually with movies like this, there's a whole bunch of like potential people that may have been in contention for a big movie of this caliber. But Ridley is kind of the complete outlier as a filmmaker. Like Ridley just like walks up to someone and goes, I like you. Did it most recently with Paul Mescal. Sound of a hilarious story of him like Oh, at night when I've been in between projects, just late at night, like when I can't sleep, I've just been watching Normal People. Huh. And he's like, huh, yeah. You're great.
It's hard to imagine.
Extremely hard to imagine, but hilarious. And he's like, and then he meets him and he's like, yeah, you can be the star of this movie. I'm anointing you. You're ready. Thanks. I've met you.
Think you. He liked the popsicle sex scene? That seems like his thing. Sounds grosser than it really was. That's not the point.
Ridley Scott parties with the Wu-Tang Clan. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
He is. That would have felt tame to Ridley. Ridley's a gangster. Yeah.
I will say Ridley is not like one of my guys. This is my Ridley movie, and it's like way above the other ones. I mean, of everything you just listed, like The Last Duel, was that it? Was the most that I've liked one of his movies in recent history. I like that movie a good deal. Ben Affleck, great in that movie.
Yeah. It's Ridley's last. I mean, I think Gladiator 2 is like a 3-star movie, but has 100 out of 10 performance from Denzel. It feels like a movie that I'll revisit. Napoleon, when you start a thesis of Napoleon's a dirty little sex freak, I'm kind of going to be in. I'm sorry. I just have to, I had a good time with how much of a freak he was and how much Ridley gleefully made him that in that movie, even though it has its problems. Hats of Gucci is patently ridiculous. That should have won best comedy at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. I mean, just skimming down this list, do you know how many Ridley Scott movies I like actively like? One, and it's called The Martian.
That's so
I have
funny.
Seen a lot of these are like great movies, capital G, capital M, but they're not my movie. Alien's not my movie.
Yeah, I love Alien. Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't? It's a great movie.
Yeah, the ones that I would say are mine, I love Alien, obviously. I love Blade Runner. And I think about, like, whereas Thelma and Louise, I really, really like. That's a capital G, capital M great movie for me. It's not one that I regularly revisit. It doesn't get me as much as some of the others. I love, like, the big ones for me, obviously, are, like, I love Gladiator. I love Black Hawk Down. Like, that period of, like, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down, and Matchstick Men, Kingdom of Heaven, director's cut, that feels, and then it leaps for me to get to The Counselor. There are a lot of Ridley ones, but I feel like I actually was having this talk with a guy at work. Strangely enough, he was asking for movie recommendations. It's one of my reliable things I can give people, Ethan, you would expect. Yeah. I said, I'm a Tony Scott guy. And he's like, you're a Tony Scott guy? I'm like, no, Tony's more my guy. Give me Unstoppable. Give me Man on Fire. Give me, you know, The Hunger. Give me the original Top Gun. Give me Beverly Hills Cop 2, even over Beverly Hills Cop 1, as blasphemous as that may sound. I'm such a Tony guy. I love Tony Scott. He's an amazing filmmaker, and his style is the substance of his movies. And literally so many people have tried to ape it, but just no one does it better than him. And so for me, like Ridley, a lot of Ridley's movies are him as an extremely high-functioning, capable, aesthetic filmmaker who makes terrific stuff as far as like technically terrific, but they don't always have like the emotional punch that I seek out of a movie-watching experience. But the ones that some of those ones that I lit it off have these huge emotional cores. And I think it's largely as a result of like really spot on casting that he kind of, they take these new levels and new heights and have these exultant moments. Like even White Squall is like a really terrific movie from 1996. Seek it out. It's probably really hard to get these days or to find on streaming. But yeah, I haven't always been like a real psycho for Ridley, even though he's a terrific filmmaker, and I'm so glad that he's continuing to make movies at an absolute ridiculous clip. I'm trying to see what is. He's currently got 4 feature films in pre-production right now.
What are they? Let's talk about them.
There's one called You Should Be Dancing, which is, I'm gonna have a look at this, which is a Bee Gees, which is the Bee Gees biopic.
Fun. I'll watch it.
This is a TV miniseries called Roads to Freedom, which is based off a series of Anthony Beaver books. Then there's Queen and Country, which he's currently attached to, which is like an assassin movie with Sylvia Hoeks from Blade Runner 2049. Should be fun. Then The Dog Stars, which is a post-apocalyptic film starring Jacob Elordi. And it looks like a remake of... It feels very familiar, which is just like in a post-apocalyptic landscape, there's these weird people who like are now cannibals and eat people and stuff. And they...
Not interested. No, thank you. I will skip that one entirely. Can we talk about Wraiths of the Broken Land, though? A movie he's doing with Drew Goddard and S. Craig Zahler. That's a heck of a combination. Martian Reunion plus S. Craig Zahler. Let's do it.
Fascinating character. Yeah. A father attempts to rescue his daughters from a brothel with the help of his two sons and their outlaw gang.
Sounds like some S. Craig Zahler shit.
Yeah, that's big S. Craig Zahler shit energy right there. I wonder why S. Craig Zahler didn't just make that movie. Maybe Ridley was hey, I really like Dragon Cost Concrete. I want to make something with you. That's the power.
Maybe it's a great script. Maybe he and Drew Goddard really knocked on it. I mean, not to pivot back to The Martian, but Drew Goddard, I think, is the real hero of this movie because it's such a marvel of construction. It's beautifully made.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it, I think, is great. But when I list the qualities that make it so special, it's the screenplay and it's the soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ABBA songs, I mean, are just perfect. They carry it along. Every time things start to drag, they throw in an ABBA song or Starman, which they just had to do. But then it's the way Goddard just keeps pivoting things and upping the tension. And when it gets too sad, it gets funny. And when it gets too funny, it gets sad. The moment where he accepts his own mortality just fascinated me on this watch.
Yes.
Because it feels like a moment where you are being asked to buy in on him as a hero. It's like he doesn't care if he dies, so now we have to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
He assumes he's dead.
Yeah.
So now it's up to us to save him. And having him gracefully say, like, I died for something bigger than me and I can accept that, just makes him all the more... You want to save him?
Yeah, it's I hear you. I actually love this piece of trivia. Teddy Sanders, so Jeff Daniels,
head of NASA,
is the key guy who questions the logic of endangering the lives of the five Hermes crew members in order to save the life of one man.
Yeah, trolley problem.
A similar discussion was had in Saving Private Ryan.
Hmm.
And the subject of both films
that's a good point
was Matt Damon, who needs to be saved.
We got to get him back. He just keeps getting stuck places, that silly guy.
And he doesn't want to leave. Well, he does want to leave Mars. He doesn't want to hang around.
And in Good Will Hunting, we were trying to get him out of Boston.
We're trying to get him out. Boston was like Mars.
That's Ben Affleck's whole thing. He keeps walking up to his door hoping he's no longer in Boston. The worst place to be.
If your best friend wants you to leave the place that you love and have grown up, then maybe there's a problem. That's all I'm going to say about Shitbag Matt Damon. But there's a really this one I really like as well because this is the one really big thing that I think that was kind of masterful in Drew Goddard's thing, which is like he took away something that he'd seen in a lot of movies, which is like antagonistic characters that are either in the ships or on Earth. And he made the landscape and the mission and the circumstance and the situation the antagonist. So I think that ages really nicely because it's like sometimes you do think that people are hatting it in films where they're like, how do I make this even crazier than it actually is? But sometimes in space movies, I kind of like, I love that lens that is not really explored. And I've mentioned the film a couple of times, but like Sunshine, I just adore and I think Interstellar has this as well, as like the situation.
I was about to say Interstellar has that, Interstellar, although Matt Damon shows up to throw a wrench in things.
Yeah, and he's great in Interstellar because he's a hubristic shitbag who's selfish and wants to be the savior of humanity, and he sucks as a person. And that's why I love, that's like the Chris Nolan thing of like, for Chris Nolan, one of my big theses on Chris Nolan is that like all of his protagonists have this continuing engine in their body, which is like lie to me, like they lie to themselves perpetually in, you know, his protagonists, and they either have to lie to themselves to deal with guilt of what they create Oppenheimer. They lie to themselves so that they can leave their family and their daughter behind in Interstellar. Bruce Wayne is the canonical character of lying to himself. Why am I doing this? What is the purpose of what I'm doing? And so I really love that he uses that. It's just another, it's him doing that beautiful casting of like him going, hey, Ridley, I really love you. And I'm going to cast your guy to do something in my movie because humanity is a darker, more selfish thing. But I do like that that's just the antagonist, because in Interstellar, one particular character becomes, you know, that moment and that raises the stakes even further. But that, I feel like that works really well for the context of that movie, because so much of it is about like the impossibility and improbability of any kind of success of the, you know, the human race. Like there's lots of people that are doing things in their self-interest just to try and, you know, rage against the dying of the light in that movie, which is terrific. A great movie, Interstellar. I watched it a couple of times in recent times. It's really excellent. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to tell people to watch it. I think people should watch it. I do like the DIY surgery scenes. I reviewed that. I added that. I love any movie that has DIY surgery. Prometheus has another great DIY surgery earlier on as well. It's great. I love me a DIY surgery.
Who was it that was just on social media being like, I can't enjoy Prometheus because a real C-section wasn't like that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was a friend of yours. I shouldn't bag on it. But somebody was on Twitter being like, that's not what C-sections are like. It's like, yeah, dog.
Yeah, no shit. That's not what they're like. Was a C-section birthing an alien creature? Jesus Christ.
Anyway, can I ask you a question?
Of course, please.
Why do you think it is? This is a discussion question, a rhetorical question. I probably almost cry 25 times watching this movie. This movie plays me like a fiddle.
Yeah.
And it just keeps consistently putting a lump in my throat. I don't know. What is it? What's it doing to me? What's the mechanism?
I think there's something that is in this movie that this is something that really does work. And I don't know whether it's just I have this challenge where like certain actors, if they're not working for me, it can't really resonate at that frequency. But this is what I think it comes down to is if you've ever gone through any kind of trial or tribulation in your life, and everyone listening is going to have an experience like this at work or at home. Of course, right? Like
the whole time.
You know, you and I are close. We know each other really well. And so these things, we have trials, whether they're self-inflicted or they're externally inflicted upon us. And I think what is so admirable is that Mark Watney's the character and Matt Damon as Mark Watney, he has an insurmountable series of ongoing setbacks that just seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more improbable at every single turn. But what's really great is for people who endure, it's just like that you have to just, all you have to do is endure and keep moving. Like they all become gargantuan, these things in our lives. The most gargantuan they are is when you're staring them in the face, and when you're looking behind you and you're seeing the new challenges that you're faced with, they seem to dwarf other things. And I think that that's something that is a really admirable reaction, because you know in your own life where you haven't handled a situation well, it's because something in your life that felt gargantuan at that time stopped you from forward momentum. And any time that you have felt like you've accomplished anything, it's because you just pushed through. And, you know, it happens even like on the most micro scale of like creativity. I remember there was a time where, you know, I was finishing up studying, teaching at the time, and I had this huge amount of work to do, and it was this gargantuan amount of work, and I was working at the time, and there were family stresses and there was financial stresses and there was all these things that were happening, plus all my creative stresses that I put upon myself with many projects and things like that. And I just remember this like short period where I don't feel like I'd worked as hard at anything, for anything, with higher stakes at the time. Like if you fail, you fail, you have to do more stuff. I wasn't in a position to do that. I needed to do these things, X, Y, Z. And when I conquered that and there was other external factors that were impacting that as well, life stuff, there was all this stuff that was happening. And I just remember going like, when that was concluded, I was like, oh, there's nothing that I can't do. There's nothing that I can't overcome. There's nothing that with my family, with my team, with my friends, with my support, like that you can't do. And I think that that's why this movie gets you, is because if you've ever been a person who's had these situations that have overwhelmed you, like the only way out is through. I think that that's what it is, because you can't, like there's no easy way. Like there's, I think a great lie that we tell ourselves in civilization and a polite society is like, there's an easy way to do something and there's a hard way. No, there's no easy way. It's only the hard way. The only times that lessons stick are when you fuck up. That's just my experience. It's like you have to fuck it up and then repair stuff and then go through to grow and to have these cumulative experiences that help give you the tools so that like any situation, no matter what it is, you can get through it. And so I think that that's what's super aspirational about this movie is like, imagine that in your life that is a super relatable experience about things that felt insurmountable and you just put your head down and you worked your ass off, or you put your head down and you pushed through, you were determined. And I think that that's what's relatable. And, you know, I know you a little bit, so I'm not going to overshare, but like we have challenges, both of us, right? And I feel like a movie like this for you is like in those moments where it does feel like you're down in the dumps or it does suck or it is, you know, those things, it's like, you know what you need to do, as hard as it is. It's just literally put your head down and take one day at a time and one task at a time and one seemingly insurmountable problem at a time and just chip away at it and apportion it down into edible bites and then just eat it and just keep going. And I think that's what's cool. Like people want that model of like, there are so many challenges, I want to be able to push through. And Mark Watney's plight is just riddled with that. And it's like, he makes it through because he just is not overwhelmed by the scale of the problem. He just apportions down the problem into small bite-sized chunks. I need to eat. Okay, let's try and figure out a problem. I need to be warm when I'm driving this thing. I need power. I need
to get this metal out of my tummy.
I need to get this metal out of my tummy and do some DIY surgery. I've run out of tomato sauce, so I'm going to use Vicodin as a condiment. You know, whatever those things are, it just feels like, that's what's the aspirational thing. It's like, if there's anything that you learn, it's like, it's really cool to see someone conquer the unconquerable or seemingly unconquerable. I think that that's where it continues to resonate. And then I think that's why it probably is touching to you, because that's cool. Because like, there's no easy way out. It's only through.
I'm so glad I teed you up for that, because I almost like I had two paths. I was like, I could just talk about the screenplay again and why it makes me cry. Instead, I teed you up, and that was transcendent.
Well, I'm happy that that was that, because yeah, it's like that's the thing that gets, that's the thing that is actually positive in this movie, is that is it. I feel like I talk people off the ledge if I'm ever talking friends, or if people ever ask me about projects that I'm doing on such a small little scale, or just life stuff. It's like, how do you get through it? How do you get through it when it feels insurmountable? Don't sit still. Keep moving. Just do one little thing that chips away at it every single day, and it will eventually be chipped away. And that's, I don't want to be all rah-rah and like Instagram influencer of like, you know, just like treat your body, shut up. Just like, do anything, like do anything positive, because cumulative positivity will always overwhelm negative or like those things. It would happen. And so now, like when there's a big project I'm doing, I'm like, I can do this. I was insane. You know, you sometimes they're self-inflicted, even dumb things. Like I did all the President's Minutes. It was 137 episodes and I did it in 11 months.
That was a fun show.
It was a great show.
It was really good.
It was a good show. And I was like, that was dumb. Like, it was almost as many episodes as One Heat Minute. And I didn't do it over 2 years. I did it in one. And I think that that's it's just crazy. Sometimes you have these self-inflicted things and you're like, okay, I'm going to just do it. I don't. And when you get to the end of it, you're like, oh, I can do anything. And I think that that's what this movie feels like, a nice universal. Oh, you can do anything. Anyone can do anything. You have to dedicate the time and you have to eat that elephant one bite at a time, and you can do anything. And that's super inspirational. I think that that's probably what its staying power is.
This reminds me, For a little while, my beat at One Heat Minute was elevator scenes, because I did the elevator scene in Heat and the one in All the President's Men. And what is a spaceship, if not the greatest elevator?
It really is. It's the one gigantic elevator that, or you could just say the elevator is him launching himself with a in a tarp through space. Yeah, that's a, it works. It really works. And I do like, Michael Peña busting his balls. The Martian has qualities. I'm not going to say I hate it anymore. I hated it at
it's
the time.
It's a perfect movie.
I'm glad that you love it. And there's definitely way more people in your camp. I'm going to stay here on my island and say, I do like me some space madness. Maybe that's my thing. But
go watch Moon.
I don't want to watch Moon. I don't.
No.
I'm trying to think of what like my favorite space madness movies
Sunshine.
Are.
Sunshine.
Sunshine, Solaris, the original. Great movie. Space.
Yeah, there's some good madness in that.
I love me some space madness. You know, obviously 2001. But yeah, I love me some space madness. People absolutely lose it. And there's other lesser Mars movies.
Dark Star has some good space madness.
Dark Star's good. But like even like Red Planet, Mission to Mars, you know, there's all sorts of weird, you know, ones that good space madness. I love me some space madness.
Ad Astra. I just found the TV Tropes page for space madness, so we could be here forever. I would rather do something else, though. I get the sense we're wrapping up because we've been doing this for 60 minutes on the nose.
Yes.
And I would love, if you want to make this the tail of the episode or what, I found the Drew McQueenie article that moved me so much, and I would love to just read in full this paragraph that is beloved to me.
This is the conclusion of the episode. Ethan Warren will be linked in the socials. And obviously, if you want to go and find our two fantastic shows, I had such a brilliant time doing with him, the great Henson Caper and Pod Thomas Anderson, will be linked. Other episodes you would have heard Ethan around the place, us talking about Bluey on Patreon if you're listening to this.
Oh, yeah.
But let's end it with Drew McQueenie, really spectacular, talented, effusive writer when he's writing about things that he's really passionate about. And let's conclude with him. Thank you, my man, for doing this so much. You're the best.
You're the best. Drew's the best. I wouldn't be doing what I do if it wasn't for reading Drew for all the years that I did and still do, but the years leading up to me doing what I do. And now our mutuals on Blue Sky. Hey, Drew. So this is an Uproxx article from many years ago called How Brazil Gave Me the Answers to Life, the Universe, and Everything. And he's talking about the first time he went and saw the movie Brazil by Terry Gilliam. In that moment, I knew that I had finally found my church, and I meant it in a deep and sincere way. If you attend church looking for answers about the world, that's exactly why I attend movie theaters. If you look for a sense of community in your church, that's what I find in movie theaters as well. If church is a place where you go to find your center, to reset your own moral barometer, or to better understand who you are and why you are here, that is exactly what I get from my church as well. No matter what definition I tried to apply to it, it suddenly fit. I walked out and bought another ticket and right back into the next screening. It destroyed me all over again. By the time I finally staggered out, I had been transformed utterly. Any city I go to, any country I visit, anytime I want, I can find a house of worship in my particular denomination. And I know that I can scratch that itch if I need to. My favorite films are my favorite hymns, familiar by this point, beloved because of what they say and how they say it. I can quote my sacred texts by heart, and I have spent my entire adult life sharing my love and my faith. I consider myself a missionary for my faith.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.